Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun. Follow the Utah Grizzlies on Facebook for the latest on weekend home games, or visit utahgrizzlies.com for more. Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun.
I'm Gavin Sheehan, office coordinator and podcast producer for Slug, and you're listening to Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, covering music, lifestyle, arts, and events. In this episode, we'll be talking to members from the band Folk Hogan, as well as hear a couple of tracks from their brand new album, The Show. For those of you who haven't had the pleasure of seeing them, Folk Hogan are a six-piece folk punk band based out of Salt Lake City. The group was founded in the spring of 2011 with a small rotating cast of members over the years. The current lineup features Clayton Elliott on accordion, Moses McKinley on mandolin, Jared Hayes on bass, Nick Pasley on guitar, Jay Curtis Stahl on drums, and Cameron Anton on banjo. In 2012, the band released their debut full-length album, Band of Mighty Souls, making several local music writers' lists and gaining airplay on KRCL. Over the past year, the band have been hard at work writing and recording their sophomore album, The Show, which will be released on April 10th at Urban Lounge with 6 Feet in the Pine opening. We'll be listening to Slug writer Leandra Jeffs, who had an opportunity to interview members of the band. But first, we're going to be playing tracks from their 2015 album, The Show. The first track here is called Fire Breather.
Yeah.
You just heard Fire Breather off the band's 2015 album, The Show. We're going to switch over to the interview portion of the show and listen to Leandra Jeff's interview with Moses McKinley and Canyon Elliott talking about the new album.
What's this new album about?
It's a concept album about the circus, essentially. And I wouldn't say that the stories are about the circus, but it is the time and place that the events all happen.
You could almost say it's more of a themed album than necessarily a concept album because of that.
So how do you draw the difference between theme and concept then? What do you mean by that?
I feel like with a concept album, there's like a linear theme that you are using in every song. And that's not necessarily the case in this album. There is certainly a lot of reoccurring elements, reoccurring characters, but there's also outlying songs that don't necessarily have a lot to do with the rest of it.
Okay, so give me an example of one of those songs that you're talking about.
Butcher is probably the only one that's really, like, completely different. It doesn't reference any of the other songs. I feel that it does fit musically and contextually. The lyrics fit. But it does not have a direct connection to the songs around it, other than the feel of it.
So as a themed album, then, not a concept album, how was the writing done? Was it mostly by one person or by everybody together?
It was one idea, and we all ended up collaborating and working together to finish it. And Moses' story-wise for The Butcher, that song, we tried to write each of the songs to be able to flow with an album as a whole, but also each song can stand as an individual. That song, The Butcher, doesn't reference anything else in the album, but it is a pivotal moment in the album because the other characters lose control of their lives, essentially, because he kills himself in the song. And then that person is no longer there, so that strength is gone and everything changes after that.
Typically, when we're writing stuff, I feel like it's actually different for every song, but like a lot of times it'll happen that one of us will have like a basic outline for a song, and we'll have chords, we'll have lyrics for a part of the song, and then we bring it to the band, and then it gets torn apart and things get moved around and more stuff gets written until we have a finished product. Other times there have been songs, and there are songs on this album, where someone came to the band and said, I wrote this song, here's how to play it. It's really different. And then there's songs that have been written completely by collaboration. Everyone has been there throughout all of it, and it's consistently changed anytime we've played it. So
give me a little more background on what the actual storyline of the album is.
When we started writing the Band of Mighty Souls album, at the same time we started writing that, we started writing the songs to this, essentially. We had an idea to have a bar set to play and a festival set to play, and so these songs have been, the whole album's been worked on for years now. Since we started our first album, it's finally coming to fruition. So the concept was to definitely be different than the first album. It doesn't reference drinking in every song and things like that. It's a much broader stories and much more general appeal, I think, for people. From beginning to end, the ringmaster is someone who represents the circus itself. I would say the circus has more of a personality than the ringmaster. That character goes around and collects people with special abilities, freak show abilities, and cultivates them, helps them grow. But if they ever want to leave, he won't let them because he wants that power. So the butcher is essentially the guy that kept everybody in check, and once he dies, the power shift happens. And so everybody starts to want to leave and quit the circus and things, and it ends with, objectively, everybody kind of dies off or not, depending on what you think.
So it actually, the end of the album morphs into the beginning again, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the end of the album actually references the idea of the ringmaster killing all of these people and then starting over again. So it's, I mean, it really does flow back into itself.
Very cool. So I've noticed that this album is much darker than the first one. Like you said, there's no reference to drinking, but in general, just the themes are super dark. Is this a new direction you expect to go in the future, or do you not know yet?
First off, there's one reference to whiskey in the whole album, and it's in the third song. Fourth song is very important.
Well, why is that important?
Oh, just because it's the only throwback to the original album, which is good. I don't think that the darkness is going to be dictated in the future. I think that we have a natural tendency to write dark things sometimes, and that this story of the album drove us to do that more throughout. We've already got lots of songs for our next album that we've been powering through and writing, and they're not all sad. There's a good mix of happy and sad in the new stuff, actually.
A lot of the new stuff is very similar to the first album. Like, It's been really interesting. I feel like there's been this consistent swell between the two feelings. There's this like really happy first album and this really dark second album. And the new stuff that we've been writing, even for the last couple of years, is not on the first two albums and it's going to be on the next one. That stuff, it's kind of like both of them. So I feel like it's just... I feel like we're definitely taking a step in a different direction with this album, but in no way is it a place to stand still. It's just a step we're taking.
I think it actually shows a really natural evolution of our band. It's like we can play the happy stuff, the sad stuff, and this third album, which is not even in conception yet, it's going to be a beautiful mix of all of our talents. Like, we've grown so much.
I actually tell people that when they ask me what it's like, I say that the first album we were figuring out how to play our instruments, and the second album we'd figured out how to play our instruments and wanted to see what we could do with them.
So. Again, with the first influences on the show, features a lot of metal influences. Did that come from one specific person, or where did that come from? It's very different from the first album as well.
It kind of came from right as we were releasing the first album, we lost our drummer. And so we went through this huge period of not having a drummer. And so there was like a lot of tumultuous times in the time of making this album. And I think that has a lot to do with it. When Box was in the band, she loaded up this CD player, which held 6 discs in it with just metal stuff. And we didn't take it out in our van. And so for like a year, anytime I drove anywhere, I always had it on Weed Eater. Yeah. Or like everyone had like a disc in there that they really liked. So I think that did have an influence on it. But I feel like it really blossomed once Cameron came around, and he was only around for like a month before we recorded the album, but he had a pretty big impact on how we wanted to do things.
So you mentioned Cameron, he's your new banjo player. How has it been different other than just the metal influence playing with him versus Jules?
Cameron is like, he is amazing, honestly. Like his enthusiasm and his ability are unparalleled, I think. Like he's just stoked on it. He does an amazing job. He really thinks about his parts. He really thinks about what he wants to do, and he's excited. And for us, like I said, you know, we had gone through a period of not having drummer. As soon as we got a drummer, Box left the band, so there was like this weird emptiness that we had for like 2 years. And then when Cameron came around, it was just like a perfect fit immediately. Like he immediately became one of our best friends, and now he's a permanent fixture.
The best way to describe Cameron is that we were all an epoxy, and then he showed up as oxygen and everything solidified.
On the album art for the actual album, which will be coming out soon, a few of you, not everybody, but a few are represented as like drawings and characters on the inside of the cover. Are any of the characters in the actual album based on personalities in the band or stories of people in the band?
Not really. I think that like Jared is drawn as the Illusionist because he wrote the song The Illusionist. Canyon is drawn as the Ringmaster because he wrote The Ringmaster. I wrote a song from the perspective of the lion tamer, and therefore I ended up there. I think that the flying trapeze artist fits Curtis because of what he has to do in our band. I feel like in a lot of ways he's the most free-spirited guy in the band, but when it comes to the music part, he's the one that kind of has to rein everything in and actually make it function, and there's more precision to what he does than to what we have tried to do. So he's really forced us into line, and I feel like it fits him well. And then Cameron joined the band and didn't, like, we had the butcher and like there was a banjo player, so it just like he just became that for the artwork. But
yeah. I'd say that the characters were developed out of our imaginations, and then they kind of morphed into us. So there's 6 characters and 6 band members, but in the album itself, there's way more characters than that. There's 6 pivotal members, so I don't know. I think art reflects life and vice versa.
Cool. So speaking of Jared, he's now one of like the main vocalists for the group. How has that changed the way that you guys work?
It takes a little bit of weight off of Canyon and I, but most importantly, it makes the shows a lot more amazing. Like, he's so intense as like with his live show, that he immediately, as soon as he starts singing a song, he commands everyone's, like everyone pays attention no matter what. And like where his voice sits, I mean, he's always done a lot of singing. Like in the first album, I don't think there's a single song where he doesn't have a major backup part. Like, but this album,
the writing process of most of them.
Yeah, for some of those, yeah. So it's like he really doing what he should be doing, honestly. Like he's taken over a huge part and he's absolutely owned it, and he'll continue to sing more songs.
You talked about some new songs for the new album after the show. Can you tell me a little bit about those?
We've actually already recorded two of them. There's a song called Whiskey for Breakfast that we've recorded. Bullet Bourbon Blues. So those two are very much in the drinking realm. There's another new song we've been working on called No Means Jeff. It's about Jeffrey Dahmer. I feel like that song is a perfect mix of the first and second album because it is absolutely dark, but it is also like a very happy, jaunty tune.
I heard that a few people in the band, maybe you included Moses, learned how to play the instruments you're playing for the band because you're originally a guitarist, so is that true?
Yeah, Canyon and I, so accordion, mandolin, both learned to play our instruments for the band. Cameron essentially learned to play for the band. When he came and sat with me the first time to learn the songs, he could play like a couple little things, but he's really just completely surpassed everyone in his abilities already. Jared is a guitarist and just a music genius all around. Nick Passy and Curtis are the only ones that I think are like super well-versed at their instrument that had been playing for a long time. Jared was immediately well-versed at his instrument because he's a music genius, so.
He plays bass, just so everyone knows, and he's a guitarist, and he's amazing, but he's like, this band, I will play bass, and I will make it kick ass, and it sure as fuck is, so. Yeah.
And that happened because he came to one of our shows, and we didn't have a bass player at the time, and he just watched us, and what's funny is that Curtis was at the show too, and he wasn't our drummer yet, and like, Jared just leaned over to Curtis and was like, I'm gonna play bass for this band. And then like, the next time he saw me, he was like, I'm gonna be your bass player. So, like, he just picked it up, and then it's especially funny that down the road, Curtis became our drummer as well. Honestly, like, for a lot of our songs, even on the first album, the bass lines, if you pay attention to them, they really make a lot of the songs. Yeah. He really just has such an awesome sense of music.
What would normally be the bass lines I mostly do on my accordion, and Jared gets kind of free rein to do everything in that whole sound range, and he takes opportunity. He takes it.
Because you had to learn, or not had to, but because you did learn new instruments, do you think that's changed the way that you look at music or the way your band works in general?
I think that it started, for a starting point for most of us, we were all on the same level because we were all starting from scratch, kind of. And that allowed us to really progress together, really a lot more solidly than if, you know, Moses and I would have just met and played the instruments and then tried to jam it together.
I'm Rebecca.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Cherry. And if you like your geek news with a bit of a twist, then you'll love
Hello, Sweetie.
Hello, Sweetie podcast brings you the latest and greatest geek news and information from an all-female panel.
We'll bring you the most recent information about movies, TV, comic books,
video games, roller derby, pop culture, and more. Subscribe on iTunes and like us on Facebook.
For your weekly dose of geek culture from a female perspective, tune in to
Hello, Sweetie.
Now we're back from the break. Let's listen to another track from Folk Hogan's 2015 full-length album, The Show. This track is called Fate in the Fade.
The truth is my demand. It's all been hidden. Future on command, and all this time it's been in my head. I'm cold and fading, the fuel in your eyes, it's resurrecting the universe disguise. Inside that crystal ball you're feeding, my soul sings on.
You just heard Fate in the Fade off the band's 2015 album, The Show. Visit slugmag.com to find links to download their albums and find more info on Falk Hogan. Thanks for listening to Slug Soundwaves. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Send us suggestions of what you'd like to hear on the show by emailing us at soundwaves@slugmag.com or hit us up on Twitter at slugsoundwaves. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by myself, Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega, Christian Schultz, Henry Glasheen, and John Ford. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our show's theme was performed by Temples. Our main logo and art design is by Nicholas Dowd, and the technical design is by Kate Colgan. Next week, we'll be talking to the people behind the project Five Starving Artists, as well as members from the band The Weekenders. Thanks for listening.